Well, wouldn't it be great to live in a time when God was doing miracles? And maybe to be there when the Red Sea parted, or to see Jesus walking on the water, or Lazarus being raised from the dead. I think for those of us who are Christians, we'd love that. We believe in Jesus, we have faith in Jesus, but oh, it'd be great if we could see it. We could know for certain. And for those of you investigating Christianity, I bet you think to yourself, oh, it'd be just so much easier if I could see it. If I could see a miracle of God. But the reality is that now the work of God is hidden in many ways. We believe, well, many of us believe at least, that the sun rising each morning, the sun setting every night, the food coming on our table, those are the provisions of God. We believe he's ordering events, but we can't always say what exactly it is he's doing. We pray and we trust that God's making a difference, but sometimes that can be hard to see. And we might think, oh, wouldn't it be great if we lived in those Bible days when God's work was obvious? But the reality is, even in the Bible, the vast majority of the time, miracles are still miraculous. They're still very rare. And what we see in the book of Ruth, which I sometimes think we should just rename Naomi because I'm sure it's more about her. But anyway, in the book of Ruth, we see God working, but in a very hidden way. On the surface, it doesn't look good. You might be surprised, if you're not familiar with the Bible, that this passage ends with Naomi saying, call me Mara, which means bitter. Call me bitter. Change my name to bitter. Because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. It's not the kind of thing you'd write in a propaganda thing, is it? But actually the reality is that this is how it often is for God's people. God's hand is hidden. In fact, it seems that God's hand is against his people. Well, as we look at this story, the honest story of Ruth and Naomi and their suffering, I hope it's going to show us that even when God's hand seems to be hidden, he is doing something amazing. But before we dive into this passage, let me just remind you where we've come from, or where a few of you have joined since 2 weeks ago when we started this, and it's good for the rest of us as well. And Naomi has grown up in a time of spiritual decline. This is a slight time after Moses took the Israelites out of Egypt, but it's quite a long time until Jesus comes. And many of the people have simply forgotten what God commanded through Moses. And they started to disobey God and worship other gods as well. Her family faced a famine. And so her husband took her and her family, two boys, out of Israel, where all of God's people were, into Moab. Traditionally was an enemy of God's people. But more importantly, they worshipped other gods. Her husband died. Her sons married local women, but then eventually died as well. And we see her views in verses 20 to 21 on what she experienced. Don't call me Naomi, pleasant, she said. Call me Mara, bitter, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune on me. Now, whenever you're looking at a story, when I was a primary school teacher, we used to say this to kids, that every story is like a story mountain. Maybe Jess and Becky will know this. Every story has a problem, and then a rising problems, and then there's a solution and a resolution. And in this story, the problem is really clear. Naomi believes her life has been afflicted by God. The fact it's real historical events doesn't change that it has that structure. And then what we will see in this story is the solutions being worked out, showing that God is doing something through Naomi's suffering that makes it worthwhile. But as well as the story of Ruth, this book, we have a bigger story, the story of the Bible. It started with the first humans, Adam and Eve. They rejected God and his rules. And so humanity from birth is in enmity to God, is against God. And so God's solution to this is to choose a nation descended from Abraham Israel, and they were to have a relationship with him. And the solution for all the world was going to be in these people. God said to Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. So here's the plan. Through this one nation, God's going to focus on this one nation. And then from this one nation, the whole world will come to know God. But there's a big problem when we get to Ruth in terms of the history of the Bible. God's people haven't been doing too well. The nations have not been doing too well to them either. Abraham and his sons constantly lived in fear of the nations. One of his later descendants, Joseph, managed to rise to prominence in an Egyptian court, the biggest place at that time. But then Egypt decided to enslave all the Israelites in the year to come. Israel escaped. They returned to their homeland, to the promised land that had been given to Abraham. But they were constantly invaded and attacked by the nations around them. But just before Ruth, there was one ray of hope. As the Israelites came back to the promised land, they came to a city called Jericho. A lady named Rahab heard people talking about God and his people. And she decided, rather than staying with her people, she would trust this God. She would side with this God. And so she hid two spies so that they wouldn't be captured from the Israelites. And then when Jericho fell, she married a man named Salmon. And she had a son named Boaz, who became a significant landowner in Bethlehem, and who, as many of you will know, is going to turn up later. Rahab was his mum. She's a Gentile, she's an outsider, but she's brought completely into God's people. But that's pretty much it so far. That's the one time that the nations have come to know God. So we've got these two problems, and both of them will have somewhat of a solution in this story. We have Naomi suffering. What on earth is God doing? We have this bigger Bible story of a world that is rejecting God. How will they come to know him? Well, let's look through this passage and see the hidden hand of God working to that end. First of all, in verses 6 to 8, we see the hidden hand of God blessing the Gentiles. And Gentiles just means non-Jewish people. So we're told in verse 6, when Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by preparing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. Now, we said last week that when famines came on God's people in the Old Testament, it was a sign of God's judgment upon them. So this is a good sign. It probably means Israel have returned to God and not under judgment anymore. God is drawing them back to himself, and he's drawing Naomi too. In a time where there wasn't much communication, she's heard this report, and it's brought her back home. But also, her Moabite daughter-in-laws from another country have decided to come with her. So verse 7, with her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. But just as they get to the road, Naomi reveals the plan. Go back, each of you, to your mother's home, she says. Now, that's an act of kindness by Naomi. She doesn't want to go on her own back to her people, to another country, but she wants what's best for those women. And surely, a journey to a foreign country with no friends, no family, it's not fair on them. They've suffered losing their husbands, they've stuck with Naomi, they've helped her out, they've prepared her to go on their way, but they don't need to come with her. Naomi thanks them and sends them on her way. But then she does something extraordinary. Naomi pronounces a blessing on these women. The bit starting may there, may the Lord show you in verse 9, may the Lord grant, we'll think about the content in a second. That's a blessing. Now, a blessing is something a bit more than just a prayer. Okay, maybe you have prayed for your non-Christian family and friends. I'm going into hospital. Oh, well, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. Could I pray for you, even if you don't believe it? Oh, yes, that'd be fine. That's a good thing. But a blessing is a bit more than that. A blessing is founded on a certainty that God is going to do something. So, for example, when a priest in Israel said, "The Lord bless you and keep you, the Lord make his face to shine upon you," he's not saying, "I hope God's going to bless you, Israel." He's saying, because of what God said in his word, I decree that you will certainly be blessed. And what we see here is Naomi delivering a blessing upon these women. What Abraham was foretold is working out here. I will bless those who bless you. These women blessed Naomi by their kindness. And so she returns by blessing them, asking God to work on their behalf. That is amazing in terms of that biblical storyline. Now, did Naomi realize she was doing something this significant? Probably not. But it happened. God, through Naomi, was blessing the nations. And the particular kindness she prays for these women is, "May the Lord show you kindness as you've shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." It's probably a bit difficult when you've already been married to find another person to marry you, another man to marry you. We don't know what happened to Orpah, as we'll see soon in the story. She does go away. I presume that prayer was answered. But it certainly was in Ruth. She will find rest in the home of another husband, but in a much more fantastic way than Naomi could have ever imagined. God's hidden hand is bringing a blessing to the nations, to the Gentiles, through little old Naomi. His promises to Abraham of blessing are being fulfilled. But there's more. We see next that hidden hand of God intermarrying, I couldn't really think of a better word than that, intermarrying the Gentiles, bringing in by marriage. Let's follow the story on. Then she kissed them goodbye and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." It's a really real picture here, isn't it? Of these women that love each other, being gutted about being separated, embracing, weeping, promising to stay together. But Naomi in love won't have what the daughters-in-law are suggesting. She says, verse 11, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and they gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." Now, we need to kind of understand how the culture worked back then. And we might think that these lovely women could go back to Israel with Naomi and find some employment, maybe find a man to marry when that happened naturally. But that wasn't the way it worked at this time. I'm not saying that this is good or bad. This is just the way things were in all the world at this time. These widows basically had two options. One was to go back to their mother's home, and presumably their father's home too, and their parents would find them someone to marry again or look after them. Or they stick with Naomi. And if they do, it's almost as if they're remaining married to their dead husbands. And the Israelite law had a provision for that, and it said that a brother or another near relative was to take on that responsibility and marry those women. Now, that might sound a little strange. You might think, well, there's no love involved in that whatsoever. But you've got to remember that marriage was the security for women at that time. It meant that they could be provided for. It meant they could have food on the table and be safe. And so whilst it isn't what we would see as ideal, it was a provision of kindness. But it does mean that Ruth and Orpah would have to be waiting an awfully long time. At Naomi, she's getting on herself. She'd need to find someone to marry. And then they'd have to wait until those children grew up. It's so unlikely to happen. Why on earth would they do this? Now, if you know the story, you'll know that this isn't actually strictly true. There is a man, not a brother, but a close relative. He just happens to live in Bethlehem with a large barley farm. His mother was Rahab the Gentile, and he is perfectly eligible to take one of these young women, take her under his wing and care for her. But we don't know that at this point. Naomi doesn't know that at this point. But when we've read the story before, we can see that there is a hint even here that there is something better than Naomi could ever have imagined. She wants the best for her daughters-in-law. She doesn't realize the best is not doing what she says. Interestingly, I think in verse 22, when we end with arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning, I think there's just a hint that barley harvester Boaz is on just on the horizon, and God's going to provide. So here we have Naomi's great plan for Ruth and Orpah, but it's not God's plan. Now God has a better plan. He wants Ruth by marriage to become part of the people of God. Now before we move on, you might sort of say to me, hang on a second, last week you were telling us that when Mahlon and Chilion married Ruth and Orpah, it was a bad thing because they were marrying outside of the people of God. So why all of a sudden is it God's great plan for the universe that Ruth marries a Jewish man? Well, when Ruth married Mahlon and Chilion, she was a Moabite girl worshipping Moabite gods. But by the time she marries Boaz, she is, to all intents and purposes, a true person, a true member of the people of Israel. And that brings us to the most important part of this chapter, verses 14 to 18. The hidden hand of God converting the Gentiles. Orpah loves Naomi deeply. She's a fantastic daughter-in-law, but she accepts Naomi's logic. She weeps, she kisses her mother-in-law, and she goes home. But we're told Ruth clung to her. Now that word clung is so much bigger than she gave her a hug. It does literally mean a hug, but in the Bible's terms, that word, clung, has a massive background to it. First of all, Genesis 2:24, we're told that when a man leaves his father and mother, he is united to his wife, it's translated as in our Bible, but literally, he clings to his wife. In Deuteronomy, numerous times, Israel are told, fear the Lord your God and serve him. Hold fast to him. Again, literally, cling to him. Joshua, in his big speech as Israel come into the promised land, urges the people again to hold fast, to cling to the Lord your God. But then tells them that if they ally themselves with the nations, again, cling to the nations, they'll be subject to judgment. So this is clinging. This is a big hug. But it's more than that. As we see from the words, Ruth is uniting herself to Naomi in a significant way. Like a man clings to his wife, or Israel clings to God, or sinful Israel clings to their allies, she's asking to be made permanently a daughter of Naomi. Naomi urges her, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. Great evangelism, Naomi. But what we see in verses 16 to 17 is her making, basically, a covenant with Naomi. Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. I'm going to go on this journey with you. But there's more. Where you stay, I will stay. I'm not just going to go there and maybe I'll go somewhere else. No, I'm going to stay with you. Your people will be my people. She's in a sense handing in her Moabite passport and taking up citizenship in the people of Israel. And at that time, that meant one thing. And your gods will be my gods. She leaves the gods and goddesses of Moab and she takes up the God of the Bible. She's converted. She's part of the people of Israel. And this isn't just a flash in the pan. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. There is no get-out clause there. And people took promises seriously in these days. As you see by what she says at the end, may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. That's serious. That's like standing in court and putting your hand on the Bible. It's saying, may God judge me if I break that promise. She has made a vow to be part of Naomi's family from this day on. Now, you might be asking, if you're a Christian from the New Testament, is Ruth converted here? Is this when she sort of becomes a Christian, as it were, even though Jesus isn't here yet? And I guess that raises the question, well, how were you converted before Jesus came along? We're saved by faith in Jesus. And people in the Old Testament were saved by faith in Jesus too. But they were saved by looking forward rather than backwards. So anything that foreshadowed Jesus, sacrifices, priests, temple, the nation of Israel, probably the main one here, the prophetic word, the promises of God, anyone who put faith in those things was in a sense putting their faith in Christ. And so what Ruth is doing here, she can't unite herself to Jesus because she doesn't know who he is, but she's uniting herself to Naomi. She's uniting herself to Israel and her God. And so she is, at this point, saved. The hidden hand of God has taken a woman from one of Israel's worst enemies and brought her to know the Lord. The hidden hand of God was saving this woman's soul. Now, it's a fantastic story, isn't it? But how does it help you and I? And thank you for being patient. I know there's a lot of storytelling there. Particularly, how does it help when we're faced with the kind of things that Naomi is faced with? Maybe a nation away from God. Maybe natural disasters. Maybe the death of loved ones. Maybe just a bitterness with God because the world doesn't seem to be going the way it should. Well, there's things to take away from this passage. Firstly, God's hand is usually hidden. Think of all that was going on here that Naomi just didn't see. She didn't see she was part of God's fulfilling the promises to Abraham, blessing the nations. She didn't see that God had prepared a husband for Ruth that would eventually save both of them. She didn't see that Ruth was being brought in to the people of God. All she saw was her bitter suffering. But there was more going on than she could see. And so it is with our lives. Sometimes we do get a glimpse of what God is doing. Perhaps you can look at your life and think, oh, I wouldn't have gone through that at the time. But actually looking back, I see that God was working in it. It all worked out for the best. But you know, often we don't. Often things happen that seem horrendous, seem terrible, seem wrong, seem unfair, seem like God isn't in control, seem like God's hand is against us. And we don't know why. We don't see what the hidden hand of God is doing. The thing is, God is God. His plans are so unimaginably complex, we could never get our head around them. It'd be like it's trying to explain military tactics to a horse on the battlefield. There's stuff going on too big for us to understand. And that's why generally it's unhelpful when you're either thinking as a suffering person or talking to a suffering person, whatever kind of suffering that may be, to say, what is God doing? Because the reality is, we, as finite human beings, we can't fully grasp it. What is God doing in this pandemic, for instance? Honestly, there's probably a billion things he is doing. Billions of billions. His plan for coronavirus is so complex that we couldn't even begin to understand. We can have some vague ideas, but we don't know. God will have considered the impact of this global pandemic on every single human being, on every single plant, on every single animal, on every single element of the atmosphere. His plans are beyond our understanding. And so the reality is, we will never in this life get our heads around what God is doing. Hand of God will be hidden. We probably won't see miracles and things all going the right way for God's people. We'll see things that don't make sense in any way, shape or form. But while the hand of God is hidden, the big picture plan of God is clear. Not necessarily the minutiae, but the big picture. God is rescuing this world. God is blessing the nations through the descendants of Abraham. He's trying to restore earth back to Eden. Not trying, he is. He is restoring Eden. He's adopting a sinful people from every tribe, nation, tongue, and language to give them great joy forever and to give him great glory. How your individual day, week, month, year, lifetime fits into that massive plan is probably going to be beyond your comprehension in this life. But that's his plan. And it's not just the events of Naomi's life that contribute to that. It's the life of every human being on planet Earth. Think of Naomi's situation. She doesn't want this. But she does love Ruth, doesn't she? I wonder if Naomi could have got a glimpse of what God was doing. Maybe she'd have said, yeah, okay, it was worth it. It was worth it that my beloved daughter-in-law could come to know you, could be saved from an eternity of suffering to an eternity of joy. And maybe that's the case with us. How do we know what our individual pieces of suffering may bring? Part of this great story of salvation. Maybe our suffering will save your husband or wife, your children, your friends, your family. Now, I don't claim that that means that you can walk through every element of your life with a smile on your face. Many of us will be like Naomi. The majority of our life will be bitter. And I'm not saying that knowing this grand plan means that you will walk through in great joy, bouncing around life forever. But it does mean that whatever suffering you face is worthwhile. Of course, not all of us are in the position of Naomi, as it were, in this story. Some of us are in the position of Ruth, outside of the kingdom of God at this moment, but perhaps being drawn in. What's God saying to you through this passage? He's saying this is a fraction of what I'm doing to bring you to me. The whole universe is being planned by me to win that people for myself, to draw people like you into my family. Will you see what's really going on here? Will you cling to me like Naomi and Ruth clung to Naomi? Will you say to Jesus, wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, your Father, will be my God. There are many temptations to go back, to live in the world where it's easier, just like Orpah did. But in the long run, she made the biggest mistake. Don't be like Orpah this morning. Be like Ruth. Cling to Jesus, and you'll find that for all the problems and the sufferings that brings, the result is, as we'll see in future weeks, a true, happy ever after.